Ladies and gentlemen, I will start, like all the other speakers, by expressing the great appreciation I have of having been called to participate to this meeting and having had this opportunity of renewing with many old friends, colleagues, and to say that I think the time for this meeting was extremely well chosen, because it has allowed all of those who, or great majority of those who have participated in the early stages of this industry, to be present and to have a great opportunity to exchange their thoughts and their souvenirs. I find myself slightly in a different position as others who have spoken before now. Most of the others who have spoken were part of either academic environments or of research centers, and they were at the origin of the computer activity in their countries, because these activities did start in either university or research establishments. My career has been throughout in the industry, and maybe it has some significance to the history of computing in France that it's a member of the industry who has been requested to come and tell the story about the French developments in the computer field, rather than a person from the university or from a research organization. This comes from, I think, if we look at the historical background, from the fact that at the time when all these extraordinary developments, which we've been hearing from all the time since this meeting has started, were taking place, the war was on. And most of these developments were very closely related to the war effort, in one side or on the other side of the adversaries. France, during that time, was in a sort of a sleeping period. Had signed the armistice in 1940. The activity which had followed General de Gaulle was certainly not doing anything else but trying to help the Allies fight, and had no research and scientific means of developing anything in the fields of computing or even of electronic research. And the rest of France was asleep, waiting for the outcome of the war. So that the situation which resulted in 1945, when the war ended, was that France had not entered into any significant program during that period. There had been some pre-war activities, I've been told, very small, under a person whose name must, of course, be remembered here, and that was Louis Coufignal, because he was the one person who was, before the war and immediately after the war, given the responsibility of worrying, of animating, of putting into perspective the development of the computer field. Many of those here have known Coufignal, and I think that was before I joined this brilliant activity. In 1951, there was a conference organized by Louis Coufignal in Paris, which some people here have attended, I think, which was called Les Machines à Calculer et la Pensée Humaine, and which brought together many of the names of people present here today and who have now left the scene, like Howard Aiken and others. I think it was an interesting conference in that it was possibly one of the first international colloquia that took place. I think many very interesting ideas and beginning of friendships were created at that meeting. It was probably at that time, I don't remember the exact date, that the French Research Council, Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique, created the Institut Blaise Pascal, or it may have been a little bit before that, probably in 1950, I think, or 49. And the Institut Blaise Pascal had, in fact, two branches. A digital branch, which was under the management of Louis Coufignal, and an analog branch under the direction of Professor Malinvaux, who had been, I think, cited by one of the speakers earlier in this meeting. To talk about the digital part, Louis Cofignal had a project to build an electronic computer. And I would say that that has been the negative side of his contribution, if I can say, to the industry, is that for many years this project was underway, and I think it never had a chance of succeeding because it was based on not on a wrong design, but certainly on a wrong technological means of achieving it. For example, the memory circuits which were supposed to be used were gas diodes, a theoretically very simple way of storing information, knowing that gas diodes have different levels of being switched on and off, and if you stay in the middle, you can store information by just remembering which was the last pulse that came in. But I think completely unfeasible on an engineering basis because of their slowness, first of all, and certainly because of the fact that they don't age in the same way, and that you will never be able to find a great number of these diodes operating with the same levels of switching on, switching off, and that it was an impossible feat to achieve the construction of a machine with those techniques. Unfortunately, this was tried for many years, and I think it sort of funneled the effort of French, let's say, administration or research institute towards a project which never had success. I think one must recognize that the Institut Blaise Pascal under Louis Cofignal had many other credits to be given in organizing colloquia, in organizing research in numerical analysis, and even in logical design of machines. But unfortunately, we have no machine to present of the types of those that have been presented here today and yesterday. I would like to now turn to the other side of the developments of computers in France, which was the industrial side. Fortunately, this part was active and started being active, I would say, in 1948, late 48, beginning of 49. The two poles of this development in France were two companies. One was the company called SEA, Société d'Électronique et d'Automatisme, under the direction of Jean-François Raymond, that some of you here know also. Raymond was an engineer by training, but a mathematician by taste, and he was present, I think, at all those meetings we were talking of, and I know that he visited the United States in 1950 and came back with a number of very good design ideas and applicable design ideas onto the way to develop digital computers. He was charged by the French government in developing a large-scale machine for military applications, which was called CUBA, Calculateur Universel Binaire Arithmétique. And he also put into design phase a series of smaller machines designed for commercial but scientific applications, the CAB series, CAB, Calculateur Arithmétique Binaire. The SEA company also had a very important analog activity, and they were designing and had designed, I think, an extremely good linear amplifier, which was used in many digital differential analyzer and analog computers in many universities, and we will talk about that a little later. The other industrial group which was involved in computer development was the Compagnie des Machines Bull. This company had been formed in 1931 by a French engineer, but he was exploiting patents from a Norwegian engineer, Mr. Frederick Bull. Mr. Frederick Bull had taken patents on punch card machines using the same card as the Holroyd card, that is the 80-column square rectangular hole card. And by the time, by 1949, there was a whole range of punch card machines which were developed by Compagnie des Machines Bulles, which had by then become a rather important industrial concern related through its equity, through its capital, to the Michelin family, by its owners, the Kai family. And it had, therefore, financial resources, and it had a rather extensive range of punch card machine, including sorters, collators, punchers, key punch, and reproducing punch, and tabulating machines. One of the prides of the company at the time was to have, already in 1949, yes, a line printer based on wheels, printing at the speed of 150 lines per minute, which at the time was quite an achievement. The Compagnie des Machines Bulles had taken Jean-François Raymond as consultant, and this is why the same type of technologies were used in both the commercial machines that Bull was developing and that SCA was developing. I was confronted with this company when returning from my 1 year at computation lab at Harvard in 1951. I went to the business exhibition in Paris, which is called the CECOB, and I went on a booth and I saw a little cupboard there, and it had a big tag on it, electronic calculator. And I thought, oh, is there an effort going on in France in this field? Because I hadn't realized that as a student. And I met Mr. Maurice, who was the vice president of research in that company, and he asked me to join him. And I will tell another time why I didn't join IBM that time, which is quite another funny story. I had too big a recommendation because I had been recommended to the French company by Dick Watson, and that created some anguish for the man who was supposed to hire me. So I joined Bull, and the machine that was exhibited at the 1951 CECOB was called the Gamma 2. The Gamma 2 was a prototype machine. It never became it never went into production, but it had already the major principles of its structure defined. Just to remind the kinds of things one was doing then, that machine had three storage words of 12 digits each, decimal, and it had a program, plugboard program, of 7 instructions. And with that, we had been able to mount a demonstration of calculating interest rates for banks. It was connected to a tabulator right at the start, and the production model, which was in effect produced the year after, in 1952, was called the Gamma 3, and I can give you a little description of it. The machine was in the, I would say, the SIAC family. The SIAC family. It used electric delay lines as main storage. It had from 3 to 7 12 decimal digit delay lines, 48 bits. The basic cycle rate was 280 kilocycles. And it used essentially for switching germanium diodes. We hesitated a long time between making distributed parameter delay lines or lump parameter delay lines. Exclusion of mercury delay lines had been based on the idea that this was going to be a commercial machine. It had to be shipped around, be maintainable easily, and it seemed that mercury was too fragile to be standing that kind of a treatment, and that's why we resorted to use electric delay lines. The machine was in a way very similar and was designed to compete with a 604 that Cuthbert presented yesterday. It had some major differences, although it was really in the same field and trying to solve the same problems. I would say that one of the first design differences was that it had a variable length, variable word length organization right from the start. The 12 decimal digits in the memory could be addressed by giving the word number, which referred to one of those 7 memory words, but you also gave the position of the first digit and the position of the last digit, so that the instruction was a pure binary instruction, 16-bit instruction, with 4 bits for the operation code, 4 bits for defining the address, and the other 8 bits for the beginning and the end of the instruction in the word, which was a way to economize memory and to have better sort of packing of the data in the memory for business applications where you have very short fields, or where we thought you would have very short fields. The machine was connected to a punch normally, 120 card per minute punch, which had at the same time the agreeable and the disagreeable characteristic of punching the whole card in one go. It had 960 punches, which were set, and then a matrix was lifted, and it punched the holes. It was good because it was faster than the IBM punch, which was only running at 100 cards per minute, but when we started to punch binary cards, you can imagine what it did. The machine was breaking, and the whole building was shaking. It was also connected to the line printer, immediately to the tabulator, which IBM was not doing at the time for reasons we never really found out why the connection which gave rise to the CPC took a certain number of years of coming into being. But anyhow, we had connected the Gamma 3 to the tabulator immediately. The plug board, it was plug board program, although it had a binary instruction. And it was a very simple plug board in that it had 64 lines, each with four holes in it, and you just plugged in the binary digit that you wanted to have go into the various positions. The holes were paired so that you could pick up again the number, and you had one distributor of going from 0 to 15, and you just plugged in the whatever code you needed, and all the 12s were plugged in together, all the 15s, all the zeros, etc. That machine was a very successful machine. I don't have the exact figure in mind, but I think the installations, when it was decommissioned, ran in about 700 or 800 machines sold. It was so successful, I must say, in France that it did, I think, outsell the 604. In the time that it was selling against the 604. They were introduced about the same time in France. I mean, the 604 came to Europe. At that time, IBM did not introduce its machines at the same time all over the world. And they came with about 18 months to 2 years difference in installation in world trade, as opposed to the US corporation. And they started to be installed at about the same time in 1963. The Gamma 3 developed its techniques also into the card program field, and that was an interesting adventure. But before going into that field, I just wanted to remind, because I was listening to the use made of the ACEs for solving linear equations with the Gaussian method. I wanted to explain how with a machine with seven words of store and 64 program steps, we solve also very large linear systems, systems of linear equations, using the punch and the cards as storage. It was an elaborate technique where you had the punch had two card feeds, one for reading the cards and one for reproducing them eventually. So you had the blank cards in the reproducing feed, and you had the cards with the coefficients on the reading feed, and you could recalculate the new coefficients card by card by just storing the pivotal element and the top of the row element. And by sorting between each pass your cards from rows to columns and columns to rows, you managed to do a very good Gaussian elimination. And it worked very well on very large systems, and you just went through it at the rate of 120 cards per minute. That was just the problem. And I must say that when you consider these methods, it put in perspective the kind of reliability that one was to expect of these machines to achieve the solution of one problem, because they had to run for hours on end without any possibility of practically recovering itself. Well, in that particular case, you did have recovery. But we were in situations where you expected these machines to run for many, many hours without the slightest failure, both in the electronics and in the mechanical part of the system. Well, we found it very easy, as our program was set in the Gamma 3, to have a card program version of it. In effect, what we just did is divide the card into 4 instructions per, no, 6 instructions per row of card, and have the 16 columns allocated to each instruction, and using this, I don't remember if it was 4 or 6 instructions per row, and we had 48, no, it was 4, we had 48 instructions, binary instructions on each card. The same problem arose as I think Cuthbert was indicating, is that you had to calculate your timing so that you could execute your 4 instructions while the card was going from one row to the next. And, of course, this did not allow to do the most elaborate operations on the card because some of them were too long. A multiplication on that machine, a long multiplication, which was a 12 by 12 multiplication or an 11 by 12 multiplication, could last as much as 20 milliseconds, and we only had 12 milliseconds available. So you had to take that into account when you programmed. Apart from that, it was quite a powerful method, and I remember after some extension of the memory capacity to 31 words of storage, that we solved a quite complex system of differential equations representing a air-to-air guided missile trajectory. We weren't in the real-time world then, because I remember that we were using increments of a hundredth of a second, and that took 1 minute to calculate. So that a total, a complete trajectory took, in effect, something like 16 to 18 hours. And just putting the cards back into the tabulator or for 18 hours and getting the results printed out. This was floating point, of course. We had, just to show that there were good programmers at the time, we had been able to put on, with those 64 instructions, the 4 floating point operations, the square root, sine, cosine, and exponential, which were not, of course, programmed internally. The following machine from Bull came out, started to be designed in 1955. In effect, it was not a new machine. It was just an extension of the Gamma 3 to which a magnetic drum was added. This was because we had seen coming on the horizon the 650 and had to quickly prepare ourselves for this competition. We had tried to persuade the management of Bull that we should design a new, completely integrated machine, but they said that that was rubbish and that with our Gamma 3 that had been so successful, we really didn't need drum, and that this was only an engineer's dream of wanting to get a new project underway, and that this would probably cut the use of punch cards. I must tell you that the interest of the owners of Bull was also in a very large card factory, and I must say I think it influenced the policy of Bull until the end and carried it to its dramatic end because they really inhibited or were very reluctant to allow anything that could jeopardize the consumption of punch cards. It's laughable, but it's very dramatic when you consider that such silly reasonings can have such serious consequences. So we did build that drum, and as we had to try it out on something, we connected it to a Gamma 3 just to have some computer to run it on. And then the 650 came out and, of course, was a success, and we were told to make a production machine out of it, and that was done in 2 months, and it stayed that way. It was the Gamma 3 with a drum tied to it. So we still had that silly 16-word instruction, which had, of course, never been designed for such that kind of addressing, and we had added nickel delay lines by the time, a bank of 64 nickel delay lines, which was to serve as buffers between the drum and the normal electrical lines of the Gamma 3. It was quite a successful machine also, the Gamma with drum, and I think with the 650, it really represented the major development of French computing, both in the university, in the research centers, and in the EDP field, because they were applied in both areas. The drum was quite a large drum for its time. It had 8,000 words, 48-bit words. It was rotating, I think, at a speed of 3,000 or 5,000, 3,000 revolutions per minute. That was the situation in about 56, 57. Well, by that time we were warning the management of Bull that something really electronic and with modern memory should be started. And we had a plan for a machine, which was a drum-based machine, but a really well-designed one, which was supposed to be of the same type and quality as the Mercury Ferranti, which had appeared at that time and which was making us a little nervous. This part of computing in France was very industrial and very market-oriented. We were really very concerned with what was happening both in the United Kingdom, and we had had also very close cooperation with a cross-licensing agreement with Remington Rand. And of course, when Univac, Bington Rand, and ERA, we had access to all the technological, and in, for example, designing our drum, this was very precious, and also in we received from Press Eckert, I remember he had conversations with my colleague Henri Fest. And we also had another relation with an English firm, which was the BTM, already named. You may not know what its history was. If you'll allow me, it's not French history, it's England, which was initially called Hollerith and then changed its name to British Tabulating Machines. This subsidiary of being owned, majority owned by English Corp. It had the rights to all the licenses, and there had been some arrangements, and it was producing the total range of, and I don't know for the exact political reason, but in 49, the majority shareholders, IBM. And BTM became a company separated from IBM. When this happened, they did not have the licensing rights to either the collator and the punch equipment. They had the tabulators, they had the punches, they had the sorters, they didn't have the calculators. And Bull substituted itself to IBM in supplying BTS using the Bull calculator, the C3, which had a different number in the UK. So there was these two relations with ICT, and finally ended up in becoming ICL after having absorbed mostly all the EMI, Elliott, and I may forget, tree, the bottom of the tree of this development of the machine, which most of you know, which was probably the best contribution, and that was the Gamma 60. The Gamma 60 was designed, remember I came to present the Gamma 60 here in the United States in May of 68. It was a machine which had many new remarkable features. I would just remind that it was fundamental programming of the various, both the various constituent units which made up the machine, with a whole scheme which I cannot describe in this time, of semaphores, of words, of indirect and relative addressing, of registers, its own instruction registers, its own transfer operation to take place at a rate which I think has never been achieved, I would say, programmer participation in it. I would like just to finish this talk in a hope that one day the design of a Gamma 60 will be again picked up with modern technology, and that we will see some of its principles applied with microchips, where I think you could build fantastic machines.
Douglas, LSE. Philippe, can you... office, because I remember in 1950, at the first summer school, there was a Monsieur Lepage, I think.
No, I don't have any recollection of it. The the involvement of post office in computers is, the strong involvement is rather recent. I would say a development which involved post office quite deeply, which was the postal concurrent to an, and concurrent and competitive with an IBM, with a US development, which was the character reading. You know that there was a big fight at that, the E13B, which has been adopted in this country for checking by invention by the previously named person, Henri Fessel, which was a coded character of wide and narrow intervals, which made the recognition pattern for the postal gyros. But I don't know of anything, any particular development in the computer.
Well, two little anecdotes, as we seem to be anecdotal here. I remember very well the conference, Lakehead University. I was just trying to remember where I am from these days. I was at that Paris conference, which you mentioned, and as this is a conference, and that was a conference, I can't help remarking that I received, when I got the invitation to the Paris conference on human thought, a suggestion that we told them what the sizes of slides we were to use was to be. And I thought this was terrific because we always had difficulty with different sized slides. However, when I got to the conference and was about to give my paper, I handed over the slides and they were looked at with a look of blank dismay. And they'd sure got the dimensions, but they hadn't got a projector. I've never forgotten seeing these slides projected eventually, held into a carrier from something which must have come from a museum by means of four paper clips. But that's merely anecdotal. The thing I wanted to say was that I was the scientific advisor to British Tabulating Machine Company. And I remember very well the difficulties in the late 1940s over the absence of the collator, among other things. And this was the point in time at which British Tab took up the production of our London machines, which were marketed under the name of HEC 1, HEC 2, HEC 3, and HEC 4, which no doubt you remember.
Back there, Jerry.
And there's Bobby.
Jerry Estrin, UCLA. I recall in would be in the 1950s, I would guess the first half, some very unusual work in photocomposition. In fact, there was a book that came out about that time. I believe the name was Gray, and it was written in French and translated and doing some rather unusual things with Boolean functions of photocompositions. Do you have any recollection of that?
No, I'm sorry to say I don't.
Bob Beamer, Honeywell, on your suggestion that microprocessors might now be profitably used for some more modern machine design, don't forget that the descriptions of the Gamma 60 in the literature are far and few between. You might give the reference.
Yes, I was very happy to be given a more modern paper on the Gamma 60 that Bob Beamer has published in the Honeywell Computer Journal. And that the reference for that seems to be 5(3), 1971. Maybe I should write it on the board. Is that right?
Any more questions? Thank you, Philippe.